right, everybody, welcome back to the Fantasy Hockey Hacks podcast. I'm Devin Davidson, your host. With me, my co-host, Bruce Gunther. Bruce, how are things?
Good.
Good. And joining us again and on a permanent basis is John Enns. John, welcome back for the show.
Thank you. Thank you. Very nice to be here.
I like the jersey.
Thanks. So do I.
Big win tonight.
Yeah, no, I was definitely excited on that one, and it'll be a fun one to talk about.
Yes, for sure. I think we're all kind of happy to see that series live up to the hype, as opposed to Colorado going up 3 or 4 nothing, or, you know, 3-0, or sweeping the series. So that's That's good to see Vegas make a series of it. This is our 10th episode, so a little bit of a milestone for a podcast here. So well done, guys. We're hanging in there, still talking about hockey. I guess we'll start off with some hockey news this week. So the Canadians, they won game 7 and went on to the second round, which, if you're a Leafs fan, you're not very happy, right? That was kind of the topic at the water cooler this week was what do you do with the Leafs, right? Unbelievable. They lose another game 7. Like, I think on the podcast last week, Bruce, I said they can't lose another game 7, right? And
yep,
a week later, here we are.
they can, and they did.
Wow, crazy. Yeah, Brendan Gallagher, Corey Perry, and Tyler Toffoli scored for the Habs. And you know who didn't score in game 7?
Austin Matthews.
Austin Matthews, yeah.
Mitch Marner.
Well, now first everybody's line. Running him out of town, right?
Ooh, no kidding.
I mean, I guess when you get paid $10.5 million a season, you're expected to do something. But anyway. So now, I mean, I'll jump ahead a bit here. The Canadians, like, did anyone kind of see this playing out the way it has so far?
Pick me.
Yeah, Bruce, I guess you'd be the one guy, right? Like, there's a few people out there, I guess. But Wow, man, oh, man.
I was not expecting it to be this much of a landslide. I was thinking it would be close, but not to the extent that it is playing out to.
Yeah, surprising. Like, well, again, they won tonight, right? So 5-1, I think, was the final score.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Crazy.
Yeah, they're just making a mess of teams. They're not doing anything fancy, right? It's just tight checking, opportunistic. Like, they've got, in the Winnipeg series, they've got a shorthanded goal a game. They got two shorthanded goals tonight. Like, it's
and that was a nice goal. Who scored that one on the? I think it was the first shorthanded goal. Was it Armia? Trey Lehkonen?
Or is it Lehkonen?
Or Armia? Armia. Yeah, sorry, I think it was Armia. Bruce
was one or the other. I can't remember which one.
Yeah. Yeah. Armia. No, they look good. And Carey Price has looked good too, right? So that's. We'll talk about him a bit more, but Yeah, I've been really impressed with him and the Habs as a whole. So,
no, they played well. They lost Petrie tonight, though.
Yeah, well, something with his thumb, right? Did it get it caught in the glass or something?
Caught in the camera hole.
Yeah. Ouch.
Yeah, it looked like it hurt when I saw it. So
he'll
be back.
Throw a Band-Aid on it, he'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly. They'll throw a Band-Aid on it, he'll be back. He's not going to miss this.
No, absolutely not. Okay, we'll move on here. You know, this is from May 31st. So just a note I made. The Islanders tied up that series. You know, they're it's now 2-2, right? We kind of thought the Bruins were going to steamroll these guys. Doesn't appear to be the case. They're headed for Game 5 tomorrow, I believe, back in Boston. Bruce, you were just talking before the show. Maybe you want to mention those shot stats, those shot numbers.
Oh yeah, granted, it was on the game was in Nassau, right? So they said with McAvoy, Pasternak, Marchand, they were getting outshot like 13-5. The Islanders were out shooting the Bruins. It was amazing. I thought the game was. I only watched a bit of the game. I thought it was fairly close, but when you look at those numbers after the game, it's like, well, holy cow, was Boston early in that game? Like, holy cow, like.
No, it's strange because they played so well previously, but man, did the Islanders worked them over in that game.
But Islanders are another team like Montreal, right? They have their system and they play to their strengths, right? And if they can get the lead or the upper hand, it's tough to score and it's tough to they're hard to play against. So,
well, they've got goaltending. I mean, I guess everybody does at this point, but you know, between Varlamov and Sorokin, you've got two really capable goaltenders there.
Yeah. And Rask has been good for them as well. So for Boston. So these are fun games to watch.
Yeah. This is why we love watching the playoffs for sure.
Yeah.
Gary Bettman upheld Kadri's 8-game suspension. I don't think anyone's surprised by that.
No,
that wasn't a tough decision at all.
And with his history and stuff, I mean, I don't think that was going to get changed. I don't think Gary Bettman has ever overturned a decision, right? I don't think he has.
No, he hasn't.
I don't think he's much for making decisions.
Not those ones.
It's not like Kadri has much of a case to get it reduced. It's like it was pretty blatant, pretty open. Frankly, I would have given him an extra game just for trying to fight it. It's like, yeah, here's nine. You can have nine games now.
No chance. Okay. Well, since we're talking about the Department of Player Safety and goons on the ice, Ryan Reeves received a 2-game suspension for his actions during game one of the Vegas-Colorado series. I'm not surprised by that. Like, George Parros and the Department of Player Safety kind of have their head up their ass for the most part. They gave him 2 games. Like, the guy was just out there to hurt people late in a blowout, right? I thought they could have sent a bit more of a message than a 2-game suspension, but whatever.
Yeah, whatever their logic they're using, the rest of us have no idea what it is.
No, it's a guessing game, right?
It's a guessing game. That's exactly it.
All right. June 1st, we're catching up here from the week past, but the Lightning jumped out to a 2-0 series lead. They're now up 3-1 in that series with a chance to close out on Tuesday night. So I think we all expected that series to be close, but what have you guys thought of what you've seen so far out of that series?
I'll call Carolina's lost three of their starting roster, right? So they've lost Niederreiter, Trocheck, and Fogle now are missing. And at this point, I didn't catch any of the last game, but just looking at the highlights, it just kind of looked like Tampa was toying with them now. It's like, we were hoping this would be a series that would go 6 or 7 games, but now it looks like this is, I don't think it's going to be too much trouble for Tampa to put these guys away in the next game. There's just too many of them. They just come in waves, right? Like Kucherov and Stamkos and like, yikes. It's just.
And one thing I was wondering about, sorry, John. They went from Nedeljkovic to Mrazek, and then Mrazek got scored on for 5 or 6. Yeah. If you're the coach, are you now going to go back to Nedeljkovic for this elimination game?
I'd stay with Mrazek.
Oh, really?
Interesting. Yeah, I'd stick with.
I'd go to Nedeljkovic myself. I agree with you, John. But I think as a veteran coach, he's probably going to go back to Mrazek. I think Bruce, you're probably right, but I would go Nedeljkovic on this next game.
Yeah, it depends, right? So it's an elimination game. The reason why I would go with Mrazek is he's been here before, right? Last year. So he played for them down through the. Through last year for him, so I'm just thinking he's got the experience. He knows what it's going to be. Where Nedeljkovic doesn't have that experience as of yet, so lean on the veteran. And he's played like other than the couple of goals that the highlights I watched. I don't. Mrazek didn't really have much of a chance on a few of those, so it's you could hardly pin them on him. So
I would just be thinking to jumpstart the guys, right? Like, okay, we got beat 6-4. Like, we're going to throw the rookie back in. We've seen other teams have success with rookie goaltenders, the Islanders, right? Case in point.
Yeah.
You look back to, like, Cam Ward in 2006. He went all the way to the Cup Final. It can happen, right? You can put rookies in. They can perform. And I just think sometimes if it's not working, you got to shake it up. So that'd be my thought process. But we'll see soon enough. Other bit of news here, the draft lottery was held on the 2nd. So now we know the order is going to be Buffalo with the first overall pick, followed by Seattle, Anaheim, New Jersey, Columbus, Detroit, San Jose, LA, Vancouver, Ottawa, Chicago, Calgary, Philadelphia, Dallas, and New York, the Rangers. So, you know, it kind of sounds like the guy to take is it Owen Power? Big 6'6" or 6'7" defenseman.
That's what the media is saying. But if you look at some of the guys on social media, they've got him, they've got Power ranked like in 7th or 8th. So I hardly know anything about him. So I'm just reading the rankings as I see him on here. But
yeah, John, what do you think?
That's the thing with this year. It's kind of different than all the other years or all the years lately that there's really no true number one, number two player out there. So yeah, these guys can go anywhere in the top 10 and really nobody knows where each player is going.
Yeah. So if you're the GM in Buffalo, like, are you trading down or considering trading down and trying to acquire some more assets?
Well, Buffalo has got what already for?
Because, I mean, you could pick up a guy like Owen Power and you're pretty much set on D between Rasmus Dahlin, Owen Power, Rasmus Ristolainen.
Yep.
It's a good young core there, but.
Mm-hmm. Like in the 20s, so for the upcoming draft, Buffalo has their first round pick. They've got 2 second rounds, 3 third rounds, a fourth, 2 fifths. Sorry, 1 fifth, 2 sixths. And their 7th. So they got lots of picks. And then depending what they get for, if they decide to trade Reinhardt or if they just actually tried to trade Eichel, right? They'll have a nice batch of picks here in the drafts coming up, depending on what happens with a few of their players, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what they do anyway. I wouldn't be afraid to trade down in a case like this to try and get some help. You know, some guys that are NHL proven ready to come in and help the team. That fan base in Buffalo can only put up with it for so long, right?
Yeah. And I guess for Buffalo too, they've got to find out who actually wants to be there and who doesn't, right? So if Reinhardt wants out and Eichel wants out, like, there's been rumors about Ristolainen for how many years now that he wants to get out? So like,
well, some of those guys need to change.
All those guys will bring back, right? Because, well, Reinhardt's an RFA. Ristolainen has another year, so he'll bring a... So he's still under contract. And Eichel's got a huge contract, so he'll get... Whoever gets Eichel will probably have to sign off on his next surgery, because I don't know if he's going to... From what I've heard, he's not backing down on his surgery option, so...
Yeah,
whatever team acquires him will have to go along with whatever.
Okay, well... I guess we'll see. The draft is not too far away. So the other bit of news here that I read, Michael Russo of The Athletic reporting that the Wild are believed to have offered Kirill Kaprizov an 8-year contract extension with an AAV of $8 million. Apparently, Kaprizov may be looking for more per season and or a shorter-term contract. You know, we've talked about Kaprizov lots on the show, Bruce. I know he's a guy you like, John. I think you said the same thing. Like, it's kind of his to lose the Calder this year.
I don't like $8 million.
No, like, but $8 million is a lot for a kid that's come over and he's played one season. Like, granted, it's been a phenomenal season, but I don't know. I'd be more inclined to give him a shorter term contract.
Yeah.
Just, you know, to see what he can do first, right?
Oh, for sure.
I think
$8 million for eight years is way, I think, too long for $8 million for him. I'd be trying more for like a six and a half.
Yeah. Something more manageable, right?
Yeah.
Like, we're in a flat cap still, right?
Yeah. I think if they can get Kaprizov signed to if they would have got him to sign this reported deal, I think it's gonna be a lot like Draisaitl's deal. You're gonna look back on it in a few years and it's gonna be a steal.
Yeah.
If they can get him signed to this, I think it'll be a steal going forward, because it's his first year, so he's just getting his feet wet in the NHL, and we saw what he did, right? So now that he knows, he can prepare better, and I think he'll even be better. He'll be better next year.
No, that's a good comparable, Bruce, because people were kind of up in arms about Draisaitl getting 8.5 at the time that he did. But now Peter Chiarelli looks like a genius. Like, that's the one case where Peter Chiarelli looks like a genius.
Yeah, because his contract looks fantastic now, right?
Yeah.
And I think if that's, and I think that's, or maybe it's just something that got put out there, right? So we know he's going to win the Calder. So is that going to help maybe bump that salary up? Yeah, maybe he wants some more. But if he's going to go a shorter term contract, then that $8 million is probably going to have to go up, I'm thinking. Yeah.
Well, he might want to just win the Calder, come back next year, score 50, and then let's negotiate after next season or the year after. You know what I mean? So yeah, time will tell. That's interesting.
Yeah, I think my problem is I still look at him just being 24 years old already in his first season. Yeah. So to me, he's already, his body's come out to what it's going to be. And I guess as long as he, like Bruce says, if he prepares properly and gets ready for his second season, then it'll be interesting to see what he does next year.
Yeah.
Well, too, and he's a restricted free agent too. So it's.
Yeah.
And it says here, he does not, because he's not accrued a number of games that nobody can offer sheet him. So that'd have been something, right? If you'd had enough games, someone offer sheet him out of Minnesota. Oh boy.
Brutal. We're not seeing many of those right now, right?
No.
Where's Kevin Lowe when you need him?
Pushing papers somewhere.
Oh, wait, he'd probably offer sheet. No, he wouldn't go after Kaprizov. He'd probably trade for Parise.
No, he would just, he'd go after Malkin. He'd just piss off Berkey again.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, moving on. So the next thing I had here was Connor McDavid, Sidney Crosby, and Austin Matthews were nominated for the Ted Lindsay Award. The MVP is voted on by the players. That's generally the award I think that the players care most about, right? If you talk to any of those guys, they'll tell you the Hart obviously is a more prestigious award, I guess, but it's voted on by the Professional Hockey Writers Association and the media, right? Like it's the guys, they care about what their peers think. And so this one's important. Who do you guys have? Like, John, go first. Who do you got winning this award?
I got Connor McDavid winning this award. To me, it's really not even close. But yeah, like you said, it's the one that the players care about. They want to know that the rest of the league feels that they are the best player in the league. There's nothing like getting a compliment from your friends, enemies, and everything else. So. It's
great when the media gives you a pat on the back, but when the guy's sitting next to you on the bench and across the ice or doing the same thing, it means a lot.
Yeah, especially when, going out against the guys on the other team there, and just having them having that feeling, knowing that they think that you're also top dog, is just, there's just something nice about that.
Okay, Bruce.
I had Connor McDavid too. Like John, it's like I just don't think it's even close, right? So
yeah, we're all in agreement. So after putting up 100 points or 105 points, it was, I think, right?
Yeah,
in 56 games. Like he had a historic season, any way you look at it. And yes, Crosby had a good year. Austin Matthews had a great year, winning the Rocket Richard. But yeah, this one shouldn't be close. If it's not unanimous, I will be shocked. Let's get into the Scheifele hit. So June 2nd, he throws what I would call a dangerous hit, a dirty hit on Jake Evans. We're kind of wondering how many games he's going to get. Bruce, I think if you recall, I said 3 or 4 games, right? That was my, right away I said, well, he's not going to get 8 like Kadri. He doesn't have a history. He's not typically that type of player, but he did get a 4-game suspension. Is that severe enough in either of your opinions?
I think so. I don't, at the way the way Winnipeg is playing now, his fifth game is going to be the first game of next season.
I guess it won't matter, right? After what we know now.
I don't see Winnipeg winning tomorrow. Even if Petrie is out for Montreal, I just don't see Winnipeg winning tomorrow. They just don't have it in the series, not against Montreal. And like the hit itself, been doing a lot of reading and stuff like that. They talked to a lot of players like back in the early 90s when that would have been no problem with that hit. They said, yeah, it's a heavy hit, right? So it still follows within the rules. But what the thing they said too is that hit can't happen with the way the NHL is played now. That hit can't happen now And they just a reminder to Evans that keep your head up, because there are still players out there that are still willing to play old-time hockey, right? But
yeah.
Everyone agreed that the hit has to be out and that the punishment is severe enough to send that message, because, like you said, Scheifele had no history. Like, he's never even had a fine or anything, right? So
nothing.
To give him 4 games for that, that's huge, right? So,
well, especially the way they weight the games in the playoffs, right? Like, they say, yeah. Brian Burke, I've mentioned this before, but he says basically 1 game in the playoffs is like 2 or 3 in the regular season.
Yeah.
So if you look at it, like, that was basically a 10-game suspension for Scheifele in the regular season.
Yeah.
Like, they took it pretty seriously, right?
Yeah. And from what I read, too, they had told, because Scheifele had said he was making a play, right? And, well, obviously they didn't believe him. They had, from what I've read, they told him if you would have actually made an attempt to play the puck, his suspension probably would have been a game or two. But
yeah,
since they didn't believe he actually made an attempt to play the puck, that he had his mind made up, he was going to go in there and blow up Evans, and that's why he got 4.
In Scheifele's defense, I will say, I think he started off, like, he was a frustrated player in that game, but I think he started off back-checking to try and make a defensive play. I think it started out that way, right? Yeah. And you do see him glide in. Like, it was top of the circle, maybe the hash marks, he started to glide. So he wasn't charging the whole way.
Yeah.
But at a certain point, he knew Evans had the puck in the net, and he just said, you know what? I'm just going to blow him up. I don't even care. The game's done. And he just made a poor decision in that split second. And like we've talked about, you know, the three of us, you could see him looking from down the hallway, right? He looked back and you could tell he knew he just messed up. So,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
John, what were your thoughts? Like, we've talked.
Yeah, we talked about it. When I first saw the hit, yeah, I thought it was horrible. But yeah, looking back at it again, he does glide in there. Yeah, he definitely could have made a play on the puck with his stick, but obviously his motions were running pretty high there and couldn't quite keep him in check. And yeah, he just lit him up.
One thing I thought too, like 31 Thoughts, right? Jeff Merrick and Elliot Friedman had talked about it. Both can be true that, you know, A, Scheifele should have played the puck or let up, and B, Jake Evans should have had his head up, right?
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
That is true. When you're playing in the NHL, you have to know someone can come around the net and annihilate you. And
yep.
Jake Evans, I know he's trying to put the puck in the net. He's trying to score. You don't want to blame the victim, but man, oh man, he should have had his head up. And as a result, it was a lot worse than it maybe should have been.
Yeah. And the gist I got for most of it is the suspension isn't really because of the hit. It's more because of his decision to hit.
That's right.
Opposed to the hit itself, because if you look at the hit itself, he had his shoulders tucked in, like, yeah. It looked like a textbook heavy hit, right? So there was no head contact. His feet didn't come off the ice until after he had made contact. Like, it,
yeah,
that's a solid hit, right? It's just the fact that it took 180 feet for him to do it. So
yeah, I still don't like the hit. Don't get me wrong, right? But when you dissect it a million different ways, like we've done and like the media's done, you know, you can see both sides of this thing. So
yeah, they don't want hits like this, right? Because one, Evans wasn't looking right. So, and part, yeah, that's part on him, but part on two, they're supposed to be looking out for each other out there, not to injure them. Right. And at that point, Scheifele decided he didn't care. He's going to light this kid up. And right now he's sitting in the press box.
You know, on that point, we should probably mention that Nikolaj Ehlers, you know, a good show of sportsmanship, made sure that the scrum didn't land on top of Jake Evans, right? I thought that was really cool. Like, I really like Ehlers, you know, from a real hockey perspective and from a fantasy perspective. He had another great season this year himself. But to see that in the playoffs, right? Like, the game's over and you're looking out for your fellow player, right? Like, that was really cool. I thought that was neat.
Yeah, it didn't go unnoticed throughout the league either that he did that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very cool. Okay, so anything else, guys, on the Scheifele hit?
I think we've debated that thing to death already.
Okay, fair enough. I guess I'll segue then with that into the Lady Bing nominees. So Austin Matthews, Jacob Slavin, and Jared Spurgeon were nominated. I haven't dug too much into this one. What are your guys' thoughts? Like, I think if you're looking at this statistically, Matthews will probably win it based on point production and the media, but I don't know. What are your thoughts?
I don't know. You've got a forward in there with two defensemen. I'm thinking if you're going to give a Lady Bing trophy to a gentlemanly player, it's like, how could a defenseman be in this anyway, right? It's like, I don't know. Like, if you're going to give it to the person you've got defenseman in here, I think it's got to go to a defenseman. Like, it's...
Well, and I didn't look at penalty minutes either, right? Like, a lot of times they'll look at how many penalty minutes they had. And
yeah.
Spurgeon only had 6.
For a defenseman, that's incredible, right?
Yeah.
Like, when I first read this, I'm like, oh, they're throwing Toronto a bone.
Oh, man.
Yeah, basically.
Slavin only had 2.
Oh, yeah. See, and he's been incredible this year.
Yeah.
Like, he only has 2 penalty minutes the entire season?
2 penalty minutes the entire season, plus 22, 15 points, 52 games.
Oh, wow. So how many penalty minutes did Matthews end up with?
He's probably just a goon out there compared to these guys.
Yeah, really?
Austin. He had 10. Oh, yeah.
He's the goon of the group. Yeah, they're just throwing Toronto a bone here. That's all they're doing.
Might be hard to argue with Slavin there. I think that might be his to win.
I think so.
That's incredible. How do you do that? Like,
that's pretty good. I'd be curious to know if anyone's gone through an entire season without getting any penalties.
But there's lots of people that have talked about how great of a defenseman Slavin is, right? So it's...
Yeah. Well, like you said, John, plus 22. And I know that's not the end-all be-all for defensive stats, but pretty good anyway.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's... just recently here, it was announced that Evgeny Malkin underwent right knee surgery, and he's expected to... He won't be ready for the start of training camp. So from a fantasy lens, I won't be touching Evgeny Malkin next season. You know, for me, I drafted him. I finally drafted him this year. I thought, you know what? He was kind of the best guy available at that point. And I took him and he missed like the last third of the season. And that hurt my team. I won't touch the guy with the 10 football again, just cause he's either incredible when he plays or he's hurt and he's hurt frequently. What are your guys' thoughts? Are you going to risk taking Malkin next year in redraft leagues?
Be late round, later rounds if he's still there, but not in the top ones. No.
Yeah, I'm with Bruce on that one. If he's there late, then yeah. As much as I like Gino, I was always that guy who always took him up high. But yeah, after this latest surgery, I just can't. Much as it hurts to say it.
I saw so many guys get burned right late in the season because Malkin's sitting on IR. And once again, I was that guy in this season, and I just won't do it again next year. Kind of moving same thought process here. Max Domi will miss up to 6 months with shoulder surgery. Not a big fantasy producer, but I did read that. So, I mean, he had a down year himself, right? And so that probably makes a lot of sense now. I'm sure it was a nagging injury he dealt with all season. Hopefully he comes back. He could be a good bounce back candidate next year for redraft leagues.
It all depends who's coaching that team.
That's a valid point. But they don't have a lot of talent there either, right? So,
they have at least the talent to... But Domi, Atkinson's line, so they got one line at least.
Yeah. But Domi was playing on the fourth line, I think, most of the season.
But if he's nursing a bad shoulder, you're not going to put him on your top line because...
That's what I mean, right?
Bum shoulder, it's...
Maybe Tortorella knew, you know what? This guy's getting surgery after the season. Let's keep him on the fourth line. Let's protect him a bit. And
he was a healthy scratch for a couple of games too at near the end of the season. So,
yeah. All right, more award stuff here. The Selke nominees were revealed. So it was Patrice Bergeron, Alexander Barkov, and Mark Stone. what do you guys think? I mean, Bergeron's there every year. I think I saw another post. He is his 10th consecutive year with a nomination for the Selke.
For that reason, I just can't pick him to win it.
And that's totally fair.
You gotta move on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I truthfully, I didn't look through the numbers. I didn't dissect this one. I mean, Mark Stone to me is probably the guy that gets it this year, just based on the success of Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
I never saw Florida games. So I never saw I've never really watched Barkov play, but like my pick.
He's another one of those talent. Like he's probably a top 10 player, Bruce, honestly, in my opinion, in the league, but he plays in Florida. And he's had some injury trouble the last few years.
Yeah.
But he had 58 points in 50 games this year. I don't know what his advanced metrics look like, plus minus or anything, but try and pull it up here quick.
Well, they did say everyone that played with him was a victim of the Barkov effect, where all of their stats went up. So obviously he's a player that makes everyone else around him better, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, he was on a 95 point pace this season. He was only a plus 12, which again, not the most important stat necessarily, but
no.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I like Barkov, but I just don't see him winning that one this year.
No, not when you're going up against Bergeron and Stone, right? So like, is it Bergeron's been here for how many years? And you just watch Stone play, right? Like just watching him back check and he just lifts sticks and steals pucks. Like it's just amazing watching him do that, right? And
yeah,
but for a winger, that's impressive.
Oh yeah, loves Mark Stone. Like I'd be shocked actually if he didn't pull that one out this year.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I wanted to bring up this point, Bruce. You mentioned it earlier. Like, should Leon Draisaitl have been nominated or considered for the Selke this year? Like, based on his production, so the guy was second in league scoring. I think he was second in the league in plus minus. He plays PK, power play. He plays in all situations. His face-offs are phenomenal. Like, I think he's at 55 or 56%. Like, he's high up there for his draws. What do you guys think? Like, did he kind of get a snub this year?
I think so. Like, he's worked hard, and he said to himself he's worked hard on his defensive game. Like, in the first couple of years, he didn't backcheck a whole lot. Like, it's... And now when you watch him play, he's backchecking. He's there. He's hunting players, he's hunting pucks coming back. So I think he should have been in there. John? And I'm a little Oiler biased as well. So,
yeah.
Well, hang on. Before you answer, yep. I'm going to preface this by saying that although John is an Oilers fan, he is not the biggest Leon Draisaitl fan.
not
shockingly
at all,
enough,
actually.
Okay, so I'm just going to preface that your comments with that. So go ahead.
I think he should have got some consideration there just for the statistics that he was putting up. It's not easy to do that. And he does work hard, I'll say that. But watching some of the plays that he's made in the defensive zone and in the offensive zone, really, too, then I don't know. It's just hard for me to get onto the Draisaitl hype train.
That's fair enough. I'm not saying he should have won it this year, but I do think there should have been some consideration. And maybe there was, right? I mean, the voting will be public at some point, right? We'll kind of see who voted for what, but
yeah.
It's hard to look when you look at the numbers, like you said, it's hard that he's not there, but okay. Moving on. Carey Price made 26 saves, as we said. The Habs are up 3-0. I just wanted to mention he's got a 1.33 goals against average and a 954 save percentage through three games. And an 8 goals saved above expected. So he's been incredible. Just thought I'd mention it. We didn't talk about those stats earlier, so
it's playoff Carey Price.
Playoff Carey Price.
The words out of my mouth right there.
that's why he has the $10.8 million contract. It's
You know, when he plays like this, it makes it worth it, right?
Absolutely.
When he's regular season Carey Price and he has an 880 save percentage, you're kind of going, oh man, what are we doing here? But if you get to the playoffs and he plays like that, it's okay, I guess.
Well, and he's shown many times, right? He can, he steps up for these big games, right?
Yeah.
And he just makes everything look so easy. Like when you watch him play net, it almost looks cavalier in the way he plays. He's just so composed, and the way he moves, he makes it look like I could put on a pair of pads and go do that, and there's no chance I can pull that off.
Well, that's just the signs of a very good technical goaltender, right? When everything looks easy, he's always in position.
And he's calm. Yeah. Like you don't see him get overexcited or anything like that. He's just cool as a cucumber back there. And
yeah,
it's
all right. So with that, let's move into the Vezina debate. Yeah, this is the one. I think I thought this would be a fun one, John. You're a Fleury fan, obviously. So yeah, I just thought let's get into it a bit. This is kind of an interesting topic. So the nominees were Marc-Andre Fleury from the Vegas Golden Knights, Philip Grubauer from the Colorado Avalanche, and Andrei Vasilevskiy from the Tampa Bay Lightning. Those are three finalists. I'm just going to rattle off some stats for each of these guys, and then we'll just talk about it. You guys kind of give me your picks for the award, and we'll go from there. So Marc-Andre Fleury had a record of 26-10-0, a 1.98 goals against average, 928 save percentage, and 6 shutouts. On average, he faced 27.5 shots a game at an average distance of 35 feet. His percentage of shots considered high danger faced were 23%. High danger save percentage was 779, which puts him in third. He had 17.9 goals saved above expected, which was third amongst goaltenders. And I'll skip this part here for now. Grubauer had a record of 39-1, 1.95 goals against average, and 922 save percentage. 7 shutouts, faced an average of 24, almost 25 shots a game at a distance of 38.5 feet. Percentage of shots considered high danger, 20.8, and his high danger save percentage was 770, which was fifth. He had a 5.2 goals saved above expected, which is 11th among all goaltenders. Vasilevskiy, 32-10-1, 2.21 goals against average, and 925 save percentage, 5 shutouts. He faced an average of almost 30 shots a game at a distance of 35.9 feet. Percentage of shots considered high danger was 22.2, high danger save percentage 784, which was second, and an 18.2 goals saved above expected. So he was second among all goaltenders. I'm just throwing a lot of numbers out there really quickly, but just some things to keep in mind when we're talking about this. So, guys, the floor is yours. What do you think? For you, who's your Vezina Trophy winner this year, and why?
For me, I have a little bit. By a little bit, I mean a lot of a bias on this one. Fleury is... He's not my favorite goaltender of all time. Marty B will probably always hold that one. But I know for people listening, they can't see this, but I'm actually going to hold up my photo album as a child. And I'm going to flip through this, see some lovely pictures of me way back in the day. And from 2000 and I want to say 4, I have in my photo album, oh, if I can find it now, a picture of Marc-Andre Fleury making a save on Glenn Murray way back in the day. That has been there for the last 27 years.
Nice.
And it will probably stay there. I pulled that out of the Star Phoenix back as like a 10-year-old, and ever since then, he's just been my close number two. For this season, he's been playing fantastic, put up solid numbers. And just the fact that he hasn't won the Vezina before, I think he's got to be a lock for it.
I think that'll play into it, John. I agree. I think they do look at that. If a guy, I mentioned the other day, there was one of the defensemen, I can't remember who it was, but he won the Norris for the first time. And that was one of the, because he had some stiff competition, but it seems to be they kind of do give some consideration if you haven't won it before.
Yeah, no, for sure. To me, that would be really the icing on the cake for his career there. He's got gold medals. He's got Stanley Cups. He's got really everything else that a player could want. Just that individual achievement of the Vezina is just the one thing that's eluded him. And this year he's been put up in incredible numbers. He's playing behind a solid team too, but he's definitely played well.
I should mention too, so when I was talking about goals saved above expected, he was third, but really it should be Vasilevsky first and him second, because the guy on top was actually Chris Drieger in Florida, but he didn't play a lot of games, right? Like it was a smaller sample size. So really your top two goalies in terms of goals saved above expected was, you know, Vasilevsky and Marc-Andre Fleury. Fleury had some good numbers. Like I said, he was close to league leading in terms of shutouts, and he did face, of the three nominees, he faced the highest percentage of high danger shots, and high danger being inside 15 feet. So the fact that he did that and he actually had close to a 780 save percentage in those situations. He's been incredible. And he would get my vote, I think, for the Vezina this year too. Bruce, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm in on the Marc-Andre Fleury train as well. The season he's put up and pretty much everything John said, except for I don't have the photo album picture. So
I wasn't sure if I still had it, but I was pretty excited when I checked the other day and I looked and it was still there.
Yeah, but you look at his age and what he's been able to do this year. Yeah, he's playing behind a really good team, but even still, right? It's
eye test, right?
Yeah.
Like how many 10 bell saves does he make during the course of a game that just make you shake your head?
Yeah. And there was a time too, he had to carry Vegas, right? So Leonard was hurt there for part of the season. So there was a few times where he was playing back to backs and he just played fantastic throughout the season. Right.
Well, it's funny. So I looked back at this, in our ESPN league, Bruce. So Robin Leonard was going at an ADP in drafts last year of 43.
Yeah.
43 for Robin Leonard, which is kind of crazy, but you know what Fleury's was?
Oh, it was a lot worse.
121.
Yeah, because I got him in one of the later. I picked him up in one of the later rounds. I picked up Leonard like really early and Fleury really, really late.
You took Leonard 43rd. So you took him right at his ADP. And then, you grabbed, because I think Fleury was there. I could have sniped him in like the 18th round or something, but I didn't grab him because you already had Leonard, right? So. But I just wanted, because this is a fantasy podcast, so a fantasy hockey podcast, so I just wanted to bring that up, right? Grubauer, like, to me, he's not even in this conversation, in my opinion. His ADP was 68th, for reference, and Vasilevsky was 7th, and I took him 9th overall in our ESPN league last year. So I would expect probably Fleury is going to be quite a bit higher next year. Like he probably will. His value is going to be way inflated, and he'll be a bit of a risk because you'll probably end up taking him in the first 3, 4, 5 rounds, right?
Very possible. Yeah. So him and Leonard could end up changing spots.
Yep.
Yeah. Which is quite the difference from last year when they was that big controversy with him and that photo on social media with the sword through his back. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny how things change so quick, but
yeah.
Okay. Well, there it is, guys. That's kind of the big debate. I mean, not a lot of controversy. We all took Marc-Andre Fleury, but he's just had an incredible year. So not much to say. With that, I guess we'll get into our last segment here. So we're going to do some DFS picks for the upcoming week. So the first guy I had here to talk about was Sebastian Aho. His salary is at $7,000 right now. He's averaging 12.3 fantasy points per game. He's got 10 points, 6 goals, 35 shots on goal in 9 playoff games. And he's at a 7.2 points per 60 pace, which is 4th among all players in the playoffs currently. You know, to me, he's playing with Svechnikov and Teravainen, and with that salary of just $7,000 and given his production, he's somebody that I'm looking at for DFS lineups. What do you guys think?
I'd say it's solid. He's playing lights out right now, and with guys like that on his line, I don't see that slowing down either. It's just money.
Yep.
Yeah, he's been the consistent on the team, right? So he's been going. He tried going the one night point for point with Kucherov. That's not an easy thing to do, right? So
he's got that skill level.
He's been their most consistent player so far,
and he makes for a good stack too. If you wanted to stack him with Svechnikov or Teravainen, like Teravainen's a bit cheaper. I think he's in that $4,000 to $4,500 range. Still producing, and Svechnikov, I think, is a bit higher. He might be in the $5,000 to $5,500 range. So a good stacking option there for DFS plays. The next guy we've got here, Corey Perry, John's favorite, I know, but at a salary of $2,800, he's averaging 5.4 fantasy points per game. Actually 9.32 over his past five playoff games. He scored a game-winning goal and the series-clinching goal against Toronto. He's just been really good. I think, did he score again tonight?
Yes, he did.
So he's just been on a tear this year. Like, he's kind of... I've been really impressed with him in terms of his production anyway.
He's a great value pick for a salary, right? So it's... He's in there in the mess every night, so...
Yep. If his name wasn't Corey Perry, I'd be taking him. But if you slapped any other last name on there, I'd be fine. But
Jeff, but yeah, no, just, it just pains. Yeah, just pains you. Me. You couldn't do it. Yeah, no, I know.
No. But Corey but yeah, Perry, looking from the Jeff numbers Carter, he's doing, no. he's
Ryan Smith.
Yeah, no. Unlike Ryan Smith, Corey Perry is actually putting points on the board.
Oh, come on. Okay, but, we're not going to get into that one this season.
Yeah, I know. Corey Perry's been playing great. Yeah, he's been a solid, and at $2,800, he's definitely worth it.
All right, cool. Maybe you like this one a bit better, John. Anthony Cirelli from Tampa Bay. His DraftKings salary is just $3,400. He's averaging 6.6 fantasy points per game. He's got good lineup placement as he is centering Alex Killorn and Steven Stamkos, and I think he's getting time on the second power play unit. So another good value play there, high-scoring offense. I mean, when you're playing with those two players 5-on-5, I think you're going to put up some points, right?
If you're not putting up points centering Steven Stamkos, there's something wrong with you.
Yep, agreed.
Well, is it between Stamkos and Killorn?
Yeah,
you're... Yeah, if you're not putting up points between those two, you're not playing between those two. Yeah.
You won't be there long. Yeah.
Nope, no, for sure.
Okay. Next one here we've got is Brandon Saad. Another value play, right? His salary is only $3,100, but he's averaging something around 11 or 12 fantasy points per game over his last five games here. Playing in the second line with Tyson Jost and I think Nichushkin right now. Like, Kadri's out, right? So he's not playing. But Saad, actually, I think he scored again tonight. I think he was the only goal scorer for the Avalanche.
Yeah.
But he's got goals in six of his last seven games.
Yeah.
He's been consistent.
Yeah. Yep.
For a salary, that's a great play.
Yeah, no, I've actually been playing him the last couple weeks here. Just, I mean, at that salary, hard not to grab him, right? He is, I believe, an unrestricted free agent this summer.
I believe he is. Just
take a quick peek here. I mean, if I'm an Oilers fan, or if I'm Ken Holland, I'm picking up the phone and I'm going to call Brandon Saad's agent and see if I can get him in Edmonton.
Brandon, yes, he is.
Yeah, like that's a guy. He's had a lot of success, different places, right? Whether it's Colorado, Chicago. Mm-hmm. He made one other stop too, I think, didn't he?
He was in Columbus, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think at one point.
Yeah, because he was the trader.
From Panarin, right?
Panarin, yeah.
Yeah.
Twice, actually.
Yeah. So, good player, good salary. Take a look. Then the last forward we've got here is Jonathan Marchessault from Vegas. A little bit more expensive. Yep. Had a hat trick tonight. He's playing on a dangerous line, right? That Riley Smith, William Karlsson line. Like, they've been together, I think, since the inception of that franchise.
Yep.
And they've looked really, really good here in the playoffs. you know, I would spend up for him. I wouldn't be afraid to spend up for Marsh. So,
yep, no, me neither. Yeah. They got him classified as that as the misfit line, and they're definitely playing that part. They are being dangerous all over the ice, and it's been really fun to watch.
Absolutely,
I'm just shocked at how, like, Vegas was so close to being down 3-0 in this series. Like, what was it? Was it 8 minutes? I think there was 8 minutes left in that game, game three. And I think Marchessault and Pacioretty scored 45 seconds apart.
Mm-hmm.
And
they deserve to win that game too, so I'm not going to argue that one.
What's that, Bruce? Yeah, no,
they definitely deserve to win that game.
Yeah. Yeah. So, nope, it's good to see. Should be a fun series. All right, defenseman, I've only got one guy here, Victor Hedman, $5,600. He's averaging 12.34 fantasy points per game over his last 10 contests. He's had 11 points, 22 shots on goal, and 18 blocked shots. So, it seems like a bit of a no-brainer, but his salary is good. The offense is ticking, and I would spend up for Victor Hedman as one of my defensemen.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The only one thing concerning there is the zero goals, but it'll come.
Yeah, I mean,
he's never been a really big goal guy anyways.
No. So I guess if you're looking for goals, the other play there is Dougie Hamilton. Like, he, well, not that he scored a lot, I don't think, recently, but he is a guy that's known for scoring goals. So, that or Cale Makar, right? That's another guy you can look at.
Yeah.
Or McAvoy, right? That's another guy that's in DFS plays here is done well. Okay. We've been talking about him all night. Might as well just finish off the show by talking about him again. Carey Price to the Montreal Canadiens. You know, his DraftKings salary is only $7,800. He's averaging 21.62 fantasy points per game over his last four starts. And actually, I don't think that includes tonight's game, so it's probably even higher than that. I don't know what else to say about him at this point, but definitely spend up for Carey Price in DFS contests right now.
Absolutely.
Playoff Carey Price. Yeah. For sure. Playoff Carey Price is definitely worth a $7,800 price tag. That's a no-brainer.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Well, guys, I think that's really all we've got for the show this week. Is there anything else you guys wanted to get off your chest, fantasy or hockey related?
Not at the moment, but the way Vegas is playing, I think Robin Leonard's going to have to keep buying hats.
Yeah. Yeah. He's lost another one tonight.
Yeah. That's a good thing. That's a problem you don't mind having.
I'm sure he's getting a discount from the souvenir store on hats. So
I'm sure he knows a guy that can get him some hats at a good price.
The guy makes millions, but he needs discounts on hats. Come on.
Oh, that's why he's still a millionaire, man. Smart with your money.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it for this week, guys. For anyone listening out there, if you have questions or comments, please let us know. fantasyhockeyhacks@gmail.com. Contact us on Instagram or Twitter, or visit the website at fantasyhockeyhacks.com. And with that, we will wrap up the show for this week. So, Bruce, John, thanks, guys. It's been fun as always. We'll talk more next week.
Good night.
Yeah, good night. Thanks, everyone.
Take care.